CITR 101.9 FM presents News 101, Vancouver's volunteer-produced student and community newscast. Now, here are your hosts, Katie Comley and Rita Farkas.
Good evening. Coming up on the program, Richmond parents line up for daycare spots.
An independent tribunal has been established to investigate the sites of mass graves of residential school children across Canada.
And on commentary, Phil Caudry discusses the GST cuts and what the future of tax cuts could look like in Canada.
We'll have all this, plus arts, sports, and your weekend weather forecast coming up in the next hour right here on News 101.
But first, with a look at local news, here are our News 101 reporters Leanne Yu, Carrie Baptist, and Tracy Fuller.
You've probably heard of people lining up overnight for tickets to a hot concert, and even for a passport. But parents in Richmond are waiting in line for days at a time to get their kids into daycare, and they want the government to step in. One mother and her partner have been lined up outside a community center for days, waiting for the opportunity to get their kids into daycare. Only 5 spaces are available. Richmond City Councilor Bill McNulty says the shortage of childcare spaces makes the city of Richmond less livable. He believes the city needs to work with childcare providers to create more daycare spaces. The city councilor says Richmond needs to work with churches, people who have halls, and other potential group childcare venues. He says they also need to work with caregivers to encourage them to run more facilities.
A few Vancouver neighborhoods will be getting a facelift, courtesy of the provincial government. Look for nicer-looking buildings, fixed-up awnings, and more community gardens coming soon in Strathcona, Gastown, Chinatown, and Japantown. The provincial government is putting up $10 million for this neighborhood beautification. In addition, Mayor Sam Sullivan is asking the provincial government for an additional $600,000 to help with street cleaning in the downtown east side.
Facebook may be one of the most popular sites on the web, but the Langley School Board District is not impressed. Teachers in the Langley School District are the latest to ban Facebook from school computers. This comes following a complaint from a young student's mother that the student was being sent messages via Facebook during school hours which discussed sex and contained sexually explicit images. The student's mother has also complained to the police, but they say it's up to the school district to deal with the problem. The Langley ban on Facebook will remain until school staff can properly review the situation. This is not the first time a local school district has had to apply a ban to a website. Surrey has already banned the popular website Nextopia.
And Insight, Vancouver's safe injection facility, is doing more good than harm. The federal government commissioned an expert advisory committee for a report on the site. The findings were released today. There are no signs the existence of the facility increases drug use or crime. Instead, the site manages to save one life a year from overdose deaths. Insight is operating on full capacity, and according to the report, the public would like the service to continue to be offered. Last week, the site reached its 1 millionth injection. About 5% of all drug injections in the downtown east side take place inside the facility. More research on the site is suggested by the committee. A full copy of the report can be found at www.vancouversun.com/citystates. We're now going to take a quick break, but stay tuned to CITR for more news following these public service announcements.
Plea Community Services Society of BC is calling out for volunteers for the KidStart Mentoring Program. The KidStart Mentoring Program matches kids 6 years old and older with an adult mentor. This program is similar to the Big Brothers, except geared towards kids at risk, vulnerable to addiction, crime, abuse, and family crisis. At this moment, there are 243 children and youth waiting for a KidStart volunteer. To volunteer, or for more information regarding the KidStart Mentoring Program or PLEA Community Services, please visit our websites, www.plea.ca, and www.kidstart.ca.
April edition of Discorder magazine is on the streets now. Features include Ryan McMahon, The Great Outdoors, winners of last year's Shindig competition, and the cover story is an interview with Hot Chip. As always, Discorder features the newest recorded and live music reviews, CITR program guide, and the top 50 charts for the month. The April edition of Discorder can be found everywhere that's remotely cool and is brought to you by the staff and volunteers of Discorder and CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver.
Want to see your film up on the big screen?
The Vancouver Student Film Festival is back to showcase the best of BC's post-secondary student and alumni film and video makers on May 24th.
The film festival is looking for entries of all genres, from student or graduate filmmakers within the last 3 years. Films received by March 1st are only $10 and $20 until April 19th.
Only 2 weeks left before the early entry deadline. For entry rules and to submit online, please visit www.vsff.com.
Let the cartoons begin!
This is News 101, and the current time is 5:14. Now, with a look at other provincial and national news, we're joined in studio by News 101 reporters Leanne Yu, Carrie Baptist, and Tracy Fuller.
In an effort to make sure BC's consumers get their money's worth, the provincial government is looking to ban expiry dates and service charges on gift cards. This comes on the heels of similar legislation which has already been passed in Ontario and Manitoba. In a statement made Thursday by Solicitor General John Van Dongen, the law will mean that businesses will have to inform customers when they purchase the card how they can be redeemed, used, and replaced. The new law will also prohibit expiry dates and fees, except in limited circumstances. However, Van Dongen did not disclose exactly what these limited circumstances would be.
Following the smoking ban recently introduced to BC, controversy has erupted over whether or not residents should be allowed to smoke on their own balconies. Vancouver lawyer Ron Usher says apartment and condo balconies, including patios, should be included in the ban. But officials from the provincial government and the city of Vancouver say Usher's interpretation of the new law is incorrect. The new law bans smoking near doorways, open windows, and other exposed areas, such as common areas and buildings, normally defined as doorways, lobbies, hallways, and elevators. For Usher, the issue is secondhand smoke that drifts from one apartment into the windows and patios of others. He says he believes the city is going to receive a flood of complaints from condo estate owners. Already, individual condo buildings have the right to ban smoking and fine offenders through their own bylaws. And landlords can now ban smoking both inside apartments and outside on the balconies for new tenants.
A group of University of Calgary students held a rally this morning over the right to pay their tuition with their credit cards. The university posted a notice on the school's website on March 18th, stating that students would no longer be able to pay tuition with credit cards effective July 1st. The administration says the decision will save the school over $700,000 in transaction fees each year, money they say that they can put towards scholarships instead. But some students are angered by this, including president of the students' union, Julie Bogle. Bogle says students were not consulted or even given notice about this decision. She also noted that many students cannot pay their tuition without help of credit. Today's protest of about 60 students has been timed to coincide with the Board of Governors meeting. As well, more than 600 students have signed a petition, and more than 3,200 are part of a Facebook group asking the school to reinstate the credit card payment option. Full-time undergraduate students at the U of C pay $4,740 in tuition, which is being hiked by 4.6%, or about $200 per student, in the next academic year.
And a new study out of the University of Calgary warns of the dangerous effects of sea salt worsening air pollution. The study will be published in Nature Geoscience and was written by a group of researchers, including some from U of C chemistry professor Hans Osthoff. The findings show that air pollution in the world's busiest ports and shipping regions may be far worse than expected. Combining industrial and shipping pollutants from ports with sunshine and salty sea air looks to be resulting in a dangerous mix.
For more on that story, after studying busy shipping areas along the southeast coast of the United States for 6 months, the researchers found unexpectedly high levels of nitrile chloride, a chemical long suspected to be involved in ground-level ozone production along the coast. They then determined that the compound is efficiently produced at night by the reaction of the nitrogen oxide in polluted air with chloride from sea salt. With the help of sunlight, the chemical then splits into radicals that accelerate production of ozone and potentially fine particulate matter, which are the main components of air pollution.
Regarding the same air pollution, their findings also show that up to 30% of the ground-level ozone present in seaside cities, such as Houston, may be the result of pollution mixing with salt from the ocean mist. Researchers say the dangerous chemical cocktail they have found is much more harmful than once thought. They expect similar results in other busy coastal areas around the world. The study warns that emissions from marine vessels may have far greater pollution impacts than is currently estimated.
We're going to take another break now, but when we come back, we'll update you on more national and international news. Stay with us. News 101 will continue right after this.
Another night's work well done. And so easy without that nuisance Spider-Man.
I didn't know you cared.
You!
Yes, Electro, and I'm going to short-circuit you once and for all.
You would have been better off in the hands of the police. You are no match for my power.
It takes more than power to win. It takes brains and knowing your enemy.
I'll pit my power against your brains any day. What was that?
Thunderstorms. See the lightning flashing. Thunderstorms.
Thank you for stopping that. If you actually want to learn more about weather, join the UBC Storm Club. For more information, email us at stormubc@gmail.com. Stop playing those cheesy songs and tune into News 101 Mondays and Fridays for your CITR weather forecast.
The Leo Ramirez Show, the best mix of Latin American music, news, sport, and commentary from around the local and international Latin American communities. Saturday, 5 to 6 p.m. at CITR 101.9 FM. El show de Leo Ramirez, la mejor mezcla de música, noticias, deportes y comentarios de la comunidad latinoamericana. Sábado de 5 a 6 de la tarde en el 101.9 FM CITR.
And the news continues on CITR. A press conference and ceremony today at the Indian Affairs Building in downtown Vancouver revealed the establishment of an independent tribunal, which will investigate the mass graves of residential school children across Canada. The locations of the 28 mass graves have been released for the first time. The list was distributed today to the world media and United Nations agencies. This is the first act of the newly formed International Human Rights Tribunal into Genocide in Canada, which is a non-governmental body established by Indigenous elders. It was declared that investigations will commence formally on April 15, 2008. In lieu of the 4th Annual Aboriginal Holocaust Memorial Day. The inquiry will involve international human rights observers from Guatemala and Cyprus and will convene Aboriginal courts of justice where those persons and institutions responsible for the death and suffering of residential school children will be tried and sentenced. A spokesperson at the conference today estimated that there are hundreds, possibly even thousands, of children buried at the grave sites. A group of elders stated that the Catholic, Anglican, and United Churches, as well as the Government of Canada, operated the schools and hospitals where the mass graves were located. They therefore hold them and their officers legally responsible and liable for the deaths of the children. Though the group says it has no confidence that the very institutions of the church and state that were responsible for the deaths can conduct any kind of impartial or real inquiry into them. Accordingly, the independent tribunal has been set up. In international news, Food security issues are reaching dangerous new levels within Haiti. With more on that, we turn to our friends from FSRN.
A tense calm has returned to Haiti after a week of massive protests against the rising cost of food. Many Haitians remain angry that Haitian President René Préval has yet to offer an immediate solution to lower prices. Reed Lindsay reports from Port-au-Prince, Haiti.
The demonstrations began in the southwestern city of Okai last week. Thousands took to the streets to demand the government lower food prices. Community leader Simeon Yves Marseille was one of them.
Everything is too expensive. We're taking to the street to ask the government to change the living conditions of the people. The high cost of living has forced us to take the street.
Food prices are rising around the world, sparking protests and riots. But perhaps nowhere have they had such a devastating impact than in Haiti, the poorest country in the Americas. Since January, the price of rice has doubled. The protesters in Okai appealed to Haitian President René Préval. Community leaders demanded he roll back free market policies and create community stores with subsidized prices. But Préval did not respond. And by Monday, the protests had spread like wildfire across the country. In the countryside, farmers set up road blockades. They used boulders, tree trunks, and broken down cars. Vilner Chéri is a farmer in the town of Cavaillon.
Our children are hungry and we can't feed them. We know we have a president in this country, so we're forced to get out on the street and cry for help to the people who have the capacity to do something for us. That's why we put up the barricades to block the cars. The president must do something about this.
In Port-au-Prince, barricades of burning tires blocked roads and protesters looted and burned businesses. Much of their anger was directed at United Nations peacekeepers. Finally, on Wednesday, President Préval responded with a televised speech.
In 1987,
when rice began being imported at a cheap price, many people applauded. But cheap imported rice destroyed locally grown rice. Today, imported rice has become expensive, and our national production is in ruins. That's why subsidizing imported food is not the answer.
Instead, Préval promised to subsidize Haitian-grown food to encourage national production. The proposal may have struck right at the root of the problem of rising food prices, but Préval offered no short-term solution to his people's suffering.
I thought President Préval was going to talk about something that has importance for us today.
Luigi Santilome is an unemployed protester who was manning a barricade on Wednesday night.
President Préval can't talk to us about agrarian reform anymore. The situation has degenerated too much.
Since Préval's speech, the streets of Port-au-Prince have been calm. But tensions remain high, and many people from poor communities warn of more protests unless the government takes immediate action to lower food prices. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Reed Lindsay from Port-au-Prince, Haiti.
And with more international news, problems with Chile's salmon farming industry continue to get worse.
It's been a tough few weeks for Chile's farmed salmon industry, which has been challenged on its labor practices and accused of damaging the environment, including charges that heavy use of antibiotics is putting consumers' health at risk. FSRN's Jorge Garretón explains from Santiago, Chile.
Last week, the Safeway supermarket chain announced it would stop carrying Chilean salmon due to health concerns. The New York Times published a story exposing serious environmental problems in the salmon industry. Then it was announced that the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, the FDA, will be inspecting salmon farming practices on site. The industry says the FDA visit was scheduled long ago and is no cause for alarm. But it is harder to brush off the outbreak of infectious salmon anemia virus, or ISA virus, which has devastated southern waters and killed salmon by the thousands. The Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, a club Chile hopes to join, told the government that current salmon farming practices are environmentally questionable. Problems identified as far back as 2005 include farms having too many fish crowded in their pens and the pens being located too close together, creating ideal conditions for diseases. The widespread use of antibiotics and food additives is now raising alarms from buyers. According to statistics provided by the environmental organizations Ecoceanos, 54 workers have been killed on the job in the past 3 years, mostly non-professional divers who die due to repetitive diving. The industry disputes the figures, but workers are concerned about the poor management of their industry. A cautious Ricardo Casas of the Salmon Workers Union, speaking from the southern port city of Puerto Montt, where the industry is based, Casas says the questions raised about his practices and the Safeway ban further threatens employment.
As an industry, the current situation is difficult. You can see that our jobs are in danger due to the serious environmental and labor problems because of antibiotics and the many number of unregulated problems, and that plays against us as a workforce, so we are in a tough spot.
The industry, a mixture of local and Norwegian multinationals like the giant Marine Harvest, responsible for importing the ISA virus in fish eggs from Norway, now is threatening to fire 1,600 of its workers. Industry spokesperson Ricardo Infante says they export to markets in Asia, Europe, and North America and insists they meet all environmental and health standards.
All Chilean salmon are sold under the toughest export regulations. All of our products that make it to market comply with all the standards. We are interested in giving consumers the best product possible permanently. To that goal, the salmon industry is constantly working because we have won markets based on quality.
Infante strongly questioned the New York Times report and says they will place ads in the U.S. media to counter what he calls bad reporting. But that opinion is not shared by environmental organizations who monitor industry practices. Juan Carlos Cárdenas, the director of the environmental organizations Ecoceanos, says this industry is very peculiar.
The salmon industry is a contradiction. This industry is a giant producer and exporter and a major income earner, but it is small when it comes to its environmental, labor, and social practices. The same is true in its relationship with stakeholders in coastal communities, with inshore fishers, and civil society organized by environmental organizations. Here we have an industry that has a pioneer vision to colonize areas where there was nothing, as they say, and bring progress through their salmon and trout growing centers.
He says biological studies of fish caught near salmon cages found feed and antibiotics, confirming, says Cárdenas, that poor farming practices spilled to wild local fish. Cárdenas says the industry is undergoing a quiet shakeup, with larger companies swallowing smaller ones. He says the industry is leaving its current growing centers and moving to Patagonia and further south still, escaping their current waters and leaving behind a desolate, polluted environment, what Cárdenas calls an underwater desert. For FSRN, this is Jorge Garretón in Santiago.
And thanks, as always, to Free Speech Radio News for making that piece available for rebroadcast. We always appreciate their excellent journalism. It's time now for another break here on News 101, but please stay tuned for commentary and much more coming up on the other side.
The UBC Ski and Snowboard Club is a nonprofit, democratic, student-run organization dedicated to promoting the sports of skiing and snowboarding and the associated lifestyle.
We endeavor to make skiing and snowboarding accessible and fun by actively seeking out the best deals and discounts for our members, as well as organizing trips to local ski areas and setting up numerous social events.
Come on one of our legendary trips and explore the glory of riding in British Columbia. Or join us at the bar to discover the true meaning of debauchery. Ask your roommate, ask your parents, ask the RCMP. Who has the most fun at UBC? You'll get the same answer. The Ski and Snowboard Club.
Yeah. Joining the Ski and Board Club is easy. Come by our office, sub 115, anytime with some money to become a member. Your membership gives you access to all the deals offered by our sponsors, cheap beverages at our parties, an invitation to all club events, and of course, only members can come on the trips. Yeah.
You run into the brush.
On April 17th, 18th, and 19th, Vivo Media Art Center and CITR 101.9 FM present Signal and Noise. Currently in its ninth year, Signal and Noise is a laser blast of sonic dissonance, video trickery, primed to drag your electronic brain kicking and screaming into a new realm of media art. Based on the theme of media intercourse, Signal and Noise features artists from all over the globe. Each evening presents three elements: a diffusion segment where the audience can sit or lie down within a circle of eight speakers and listen to compelling compositions. Next, festival participants can mingle amongst a series of installations like Endless Kiss or Sex Noise and various slab works presented by Vivo staff members, or a blanket tent presented by the Seam Rippers. Capping off the festival are a series of live performances by the likes of Robot Cowboy, Ghost Taco, Triptych, Touching Velvet, to name a few. Signal and Noise at the Video in 1965 Main Street, April 17th, 18th, and 19th, brought to you by the Vivo Media Arts Center and CITR 101.9 FM.
Better Environmentally Sound Transportation is proud to offer bike valet parking to events in Metro Vancouver. Inspired by the widely successful valet parking in San Francisco, 2 years ago Best began running bike valet in Vancouver with great results. Concert goers in Deer Lake Park, fans of the Vancouver Canadiens, and families spending a day at community events have had their bicycles parked conveniently and stored safely while they enjoyed themselves worry-free. This year, Best is expanding Bike Valet to serve more events, park more bikes, and make traveling on two wheels throughout Metro Vancouver even easier. Contact Best at 604-669-2860 or CAM at best.bc.ca for more information about volunteering, sponsorship opportunities, and booking Bike Valet for your event.
Welcome back to News 101. It's now time for commentary, and this week, Phil discusses Canada's GST cuts and what the future of tax cuts should look like.
Jim Flaherty delivered his budget on Wednesday in the House of Commons, and as promised, the budget was much leaner, didn't include any new programs in Canada or any major tax breaks. However, important issues to Canadians were definitely touched upon, and I want to go over them today. I'm going to start off with the good in the budget. Jim Flaherty introduced a proposal to include a tax-free savings account for Canadians to encourage savings. Canadians are able to have $5,000 in an account that gains growth tax-free. In principle, this is a great idea. People spend more than they even earn in a lot of cases, and we need to start saving more as a country. However, this plan is going to encourage more bank accounts and will increase the bank administrative fees and bureaucracy. So it's not all win-win. The second area of the budget that I really liked was education. There's going to be more grant money for the Canadian Student Grant Program at $350 million, and this coincides with the wind-down of the Millennium Scholarship Fund. There will also be $25 million over 2 years to establish a new Canadian Grant Scholarship Award to attract top Canadian and international doctoral students. If Canada is going to compete with China and India, it's going to have to be a well-educated society and compete with them based on product and service quality rather than the lowest price. The third area of the budget that intrigued me was in crime prevention. There's going to be a lot more money for recruiting frontline officers and to train them across the country. $400 million will be set aside for the provinces and the territories to train more officers. This is a great move because it coincides with the Tories' crime bill to get tough on crime. If the Tories want to see their crime bill in action, they're going to need officers on the front lines, and this provision enables them to do just that. On to the bad areas of the budget, the first being Aboriginal Canadians. Almost $700 million will be spent for new programs. As we've seen in the last 30 years, government programs have done nothing for Aboriginal Canadians. Their standard of living has gone down, their educational and work opportunities have also suffered. These kind of programs, while good in principle, including cleaning up the water supply in Aboriginal communities, should be consolidated into their appropriate portfolios instead of on its own. The Tories have the opportunity to take leadership on this issue to make it a central plank, but choose not to and choose to follow the status quo of simply throwing more money at the problem, which has not been the solution in the last 30 years. The second area of contention I have with the budget is on immigration. $22 million will be spent to fast-track permanent citizenship. While I think there is a lot of bureaucracy when it comes to immigration, the fact of the matter is that we need more background checks to ensure that we're not going to have criminals coming to this country. Major urban areas of Canada have had their problems with crime lords from overseas, and the last thing Canada needs is more of that. If anything, I think that $22 million could be spent on border security. Thirdly, agriculture, which has always been a major point of contention for me. I firmly believe that we need to open a Canadian agriculture to international markets. The fact is that consumers are paying way more than they should be for dairy products and wheat products because of the Wheat Board and Dairy Board. And the $92 million slush fund that the government's proposing now does nothing for consumers and only furthers the interest of farmers. The government should be looking out for the consumer, not the producer. And this is another area that the Tories are not taking leadership on. I've been quite critical of the Tories on the environment, and I have to be again. They're spending money towards the environment, but it's not doing a lot of good towards solving the problem now, and seems like a way to stall for time. A lot of the money in this budget towards the environment is going towards research and development, and setting up a Made in Canada solution to global warming. I think this is the wrong solution. This is a global problem, and it needs global action. I'm really disappointed in the Tories taking such a partisan stance on solving environmental problems. They need to get engaged with the international community and with international organizations as a way to solve this problem rather than spending money on research and development to seeing if the problem actually exists. So overall, I'd have to give the budget about a C+. It has some interesting elements to it, encouraging savings and education and getting tough on crime. But at the same time, it really takes a status quo on quite a few issues that need leadership, such as Aboriginal Canadian issues, immigration, farming, and the environment. This budget is definitely intended to pass. It's not the kind of budget that I see the Conservatives will fall on. And I think it will be one of those budgets that won't be remembered in years to come. There's no sort of radical change that's being proposed, but that isn't necessarily a bad thing. The Canadian economy is doing pretty well right now, and staying the course is not necessarily the worst idea. However, I will be taking this budget into account when grading the next one. If Flaherty does not improve his performance in these areas that I've outlined, I may not give his budget a passing grade. For News 101 Commentary, I'm Phil Caudry.
That was a previous episode he recorded in regards to the last Conservative budget federally. We're now going to go back to Phil for an in-depth look at the GST cuts that have recently come up.
Exactly 18 years ago, the General Service Tax, otherwise known as the GST, was passed in the House of Commons and made into law. The then 7% tax replaced the 13.5% manufacturing sales tax nationwide. The GST has been controversial in its 18-year history. Generally, Canadians see it as a bad tax. One of the reasons Mulroney's government was left with two seats in the 1993 election was because they introduced the GST. The Liberals, in their now infamous election Red Book of 1993, promised to remove the GST, and as we all know now, it was one of the many promises Christian
Chen reneged on. However, Canada's current Conservative government has slashed the unpopular GST by 1% in each of its last 2 years, reducing it to 5%. This has proven popular among Canadians, and that's logical. With big purchases, such as a car or a couch, consumers see significant savings. But is a GST cut the best tax cut? Sure, cutting the GST helps people that consume a higher percentage of their income, and has been proven in many studies. Lower income earners spend more of their money. So logically, it should be helping lower income earners rather than higher income earners. However, essential goods such as food are GST exempt, and GST exempt goods represent a larger proportion of spending for lower income earners. Therefore, the people that reap the most rewards from the GST cut are people with higher incomes. The best way to help lower income earners is to raise a tax-free bar, otherwise known as an income tax cut. However, the GST cut has proven popular for Harper's government. So while not the best type of tax cut, the optics of the GST tax cut have worked very well in Harper's favor. Repealing the 2% would be political suicide. It would be very hard to repeal the GST tax cuts, however. It would be the equivalent of political suicide for a Liberal or a Conservative. The best course of action for future Canadian tax policy is to keep the GST at 5% and focus on more income tax cuts in the future. For News 101 Commentary, I'm Phil Caudry.
And thanks to Phil for that additional piece. It's time for a look at our oddity of the week, and our producer Megan Turcotto is here with us now with a story about people putting padlocks on their pants.
Yes, Katie. In Jakarta, Indonesia, massage parlors are asking their female masseuses to padlock their skirts and pants to make it clear that sex is not on offer. But the move has been protested by Women's Affairs Minister of Indonesia, where the massage parlors are often a front for prostitution. Matthias Sawasno, the Women's Affairs Minister of Indonesia, told Jakarta Post newspaper Thursday that the use of padlocks is not the right way to prevent prostitution, calling it an insult to women. At least one parlor in the tourist town of Batu on Java Island has required its masseuses to padlock their skirts or trousers to make it clear that the establishment does not tolerate prostitution. Others in the town started following suit after local officials suggested it was a good idea at a recent meeting with parlor owners. TV footage and photographs have shown several masseuses with small padlocks in the zip of their pants or skirts in recent days. So, what do you guys think about that?
Okay, so let's clarify what's happening in this story.
They actually have a physical padlock on the zipper of their pants.
As a symbolic gesture to say they are not prostitutes.
So, what was the movie in the 80s that we probably all grew up seeing where the woman has a chastity belt on and it actually works? Princess Bride or something?
Robin Hood Men in Tights.
Thank you, Leanne.
So, I'm picturing this is like a modern day version of that, but it's with fabric, so that doesn't work, right? Like, you couldn't actually...
Wait, is it an actual
padlock?
It's a symbolic padlock.
Oh, so it's not... Oh, okay. I'm thinking, like, you know when you have a jewelry box when you're really little and you get the little tiny padlock that you put through your jewelry box with a little mini key, you know, just to have that extra feeling like your jewelry's safe, like, I guess... So you feel like your other jewelry's safe? I don't know.
Okay, so anyway, so it's a symbolic gesture. It's almost like a metaphor.
Yes.
But,
They're metaphorically not for sale.
Right. But
it's politically incorrect, almost. You know, it is proving a point. But do you really have to put a physical padlock in between you and someone else to say that, no, I'm, like, that sex is not on the table?
Right.
It's kind of...
It might prevent suggestive offers.
Do you think so?
A study on it.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, we could do a study on it. That's probably the...
Do you think it's not giving women the benefit of the doubt to, make their own decisions and exercise their own free will? Like,
yes, I do.
That's what I'm trying to articulate. I'm sorry. 3 hours.
Well, yes, I do. Well, no, I mean, yeah. I think that's a really good point, is that that's one of the oddest things of the nature of this story, is that it's still a pimp.
Couldn't just say...
Right, he's still a pimp. He's still saying, he's still dictating what's going to happen under her underwear.
Regardless of where her padlock is or not.
Okay. Odd story for sure. I think that it's an interesting one for further research, ultimately.
We'll be following up on that one in the summer.
Right.
For sure.
We'll be looking more into that. Yes. Okay. So we're going to go now to a quick PSA break. And when we come back, you will hear about UBC Athletics. Thunderbird Ion Sports is next.
Hey, 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 it's too bad. This is William Shatner. Imagine a children's hospital network that boldly goes where none have gone before, and that's Shriners Hospitals for Children. Shriners Hospitals combine state-of-the-art research and teaching programs with world-class orthopedic burn, spinal cord injury, and cleft lip and palate medical care. At Shriners, tomorrow's medical care is here today. Call 1-800-361-7256 for more information. Shriners, having fun and helping kids.
Hi, I'm Kirsty.
And I'm Sheila.
And we're both single moms. We started SPOC UBC, Single Parenting on Campus, an AMS club, with the hope of drawing attention to the additional challenges single parenting students face on our campus. We want to create a space for single parenting students to find resources and support.
Our first meeting will be held on Tuesday, November 6th from 11 to 12:30 at the Women and Gender Studies WAGS building right next to Brock Hall. We welcome all single parenting students and, of course, allies. And please remember that your children are always welcome.
Please help us spread the word by informing any single parenting students that you know about our group. We're also open to receiving anecdotes or stories from single parent students regarding their time spent at UBC.
Feel free to drop by our meeting on November 6th or send us an email at spoc.ubc@gmail.com. We really look forward to hearing or seeing you.
Welcome back to News 101 on CITR. I'm Katie Comley alongside Rita Farkas coming to you live from the Student Union Building at UBC. Thanks for being with us tonight. It's 5:49 and we're going to turn things over to Tyler Noble for Thunderbird Ion Sports.
All right, thanks very much, Katie. The UBC Thunderbird baseball team is looking to get back to its winning ways against the Corbin College Warriors this weekend at Nat Bailey Stadium, following some tough outings last weekend against Concordia. And they appear to be back on the right track thanks to a 5-3 victory in conference play this afternoon. Corbin got all their runs in the first inning off starter Mark Hardy, but it was Scott Webster's two-run homer that proved to be the difference as UBC improves to 11-3 on the season. Webster really has emerged as a bright spot on the UBC lineup, leading the team with an impressive 419 batting average heading into today, followed closely by two others, John Cernick and Mike Sterna, both of whom have 10 RBIs in conference play. On the mound, Hardy and Eric Brown have been putting together quality starts all season. Despite running into some trouble last weekend against Concordia, Hardy remains unbeaten in five starts with an ERA of 2.03 heading into today. Brown has been equally as impressive in his freshman year, posting a perfect record of 3-0 in three starts with a minuscule 1.35 ERA. The Birds and Warriors are back in action tomorrow out at the Nat with game time set for 12 noon and 3 p.m., and you can hear all the action on the web as well at gothunderbirds.ca. The UBC women's golf team finished strong during the second round of the Matador Spring Invitational at Tierra Rajada Golf Club in Moore Park, California, Tuesday, to move up one spot in the team battle to sixth with a final tally of 314 strokes. Leading the way for the Birds were junior Caitlin Troop, who had a back-to-back rounds of 78 to finish in a tie for 10th, while captain Kyla Inaba carded a team-best 4-over par 76. It was the team's last tune-up before the NAIA Region 1 Championship coming up later this month in Idaho. UBC head coach Chris McDonald has to be satisfied with the performance he saw from the Ladybirds down in California. Since taking charge of the UBC program, McDonald has led the women's team to six consecutive NAIA Region 1 championships. Last year, the Birds earned a bronze at the Big Dance and look poised to have another strong showing this year. The tournament runs April 26th to 30th at the Coeur d'Alene Golf Club in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. Also this weekend, men's rugby takes on Richmond RFC tomorrow at Wolfson Field. And just a quick update on NHL playoffs, a.k.a. what I call the best time of the year. Pittsburgh leads Ottawa 3-2 in the second intermission. The Penguins, of course, with the 1-0 series lead in the best of seven. Peter Sikora with a pair, Sergei Gonchar the other for Pittsburgh. Sean Donovan and Jason Spezza scoring for Ottawa. New York and New Jersey are tied late in the second. That's scoreless, rather. Philadelphia leading Washington right now 4-2 in the second intermission. That's game one of that series. Alex Ovechkin held off the score sheet so far, and coming up shortly, that's in about 15 minutes' time, Colorado and Minnesota game two. The Avs winning the first one in overtime a couple of days ago. And Calgary Flames and San Jose Sharks, they're currently in a two-game break in their series after splitting the first two. And I know our producer, Megan's probably burning up inside over a penalty-filled second period last night that ultimately cost the Flames. Katie.
Well. Too bad the Canucks aren't in the playoffs, but I guess we'll have to find another team to cheer for. So
yeah, there you go.
Thank you so much, Tyler. And before we go tonight, today is the last day of classes here at the University of British Columbia in Vancouver. And instead of the customary Arts County Fair, the Alma Mater Society has organized a new event called the AMS Block Party. It's the first year this event has been run, and our intrepid reporters Megan Turcotto and Leanne Yu went outside to see what it's all about.
Coming to you from the AMS Block Party, where we're with
Bob Orlando
for the Engineering Undergraduate Society. So, Bob, what is your event here today?
Our event here today is Sausage Foost. Now, usually it would be called Sausage Fest, but since we are the EUS, we threw that in there too.
Very clever.
And why did you choose Sausage Foost as the name of your event?
Well, as you may know, engineering is approximately 80% guys. And people usually chant sausage at us, so why not?
And what can you actually do at the Sausage Fest booth?
We sell sausages. We have smokies and we have bratwursts. And they're going like mad.
And so earlier today you had a sausage eating contest. What were the results of that?
The results were that we had a lot of people that don't want to eat sausages anymore. Basically, they had to down 6 sausages as fast as they could. One person had to drop out after 3 sausages. And we had a few people made it and a few people didn't, but it was a good time. No one threw up, so that was cool.
Did anybody make it the full 6?
To all 6? Yeah, we had 3 people finish.
What was the record time?
We didn't actually time them, but I would guess it was something like 3 minutes.
Thank you, Bob.
Yeah, you're welcome.
We're here with Irene, who is the operator of the bungee run. Irene, what is the bungee run?
Bungee run is basically two guys. They're wearing a suit and have a wire in the back. And they try to run and put their back onto the thing between them. And then they try to retrieve it. But they always got... It's like a bungee jump, except it's horizontal. So there's a big force trying to pull them forward. Put them back. So it's pretty hard. Yeah.
Has there been fierce competition so far between friends?
Yes. Very fearful competition. Like, it's really hectic and crazy.
So, we're talking to
Pat
about his experience with the bungee run. And can you just tell us what it's like to be, I guess, attached to this bungee and running?
It's really amazing, actually. You don't really feel it for a while, and then all of a sudden you feel it, like, pull almost on your chest, and then you're flying backwards, but it's really great.
Because everyone looks really tired after, this is his competitor here. Did you also find the bungee run to be quite challenging?
It was not that challenging to beat him, but, I mean, some people might find it challenging. This is one of my roommates. He's a little weak at times. Apparently he's going to buy me a beer now.
Misinterpreted statement.
Do you guys have any strategies, or did you have any while you were doing the bungee run?
Just never stop pulling.
I was definitely going for the you run until you feel it, and then you just dive.
Never dive. Just keep pulling, and that's why you win. Just keep walking. Walk, 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 walk. Place it.
Okay, so people are getting really into the bungee running. Thanks,
very
guys.
Very excellent.
We're here with Sina of the Joust game at the AMS Block Party. Sina, how would you describe this game? I call it the Q-tip fight.
Yeah, basically two people have Q-tips and they are standing on circular spots and they're just trying to get each other off these spots. And the game is best out of three without headshots.
And so have good friends been becoming bitter foes on this?
Yep, I've seen many headshots, although it's not allowed. And I've seen some vicious girls on this arena. And they have knocked each other out pretty hard.
Great, thank you. We're here with Sky, who's just finished jousting with his friend. Sky, how did you like the little fight?
It's pretty good. I won, so that was good.
Any strategies?
Go for the legs. That's the way to do it.
So you said you're enjoying the ACF block party. AMS block party better than ACF. Why is that?
It's got more things to do. ACF, you just kind of go and get really drunk, and then that's that. And then it's just a bunch of rowdiness. But this has got, like, more diversity, more stuff, you know.
Thank you very much. Can you describe your costume for the radio listeners?
Well, my costume involves a big furry thing. Some people might call it a gorilla.
And a mask as well?
Yeah, there's a mask, a gorilla mask. Some little eye slits so I can see through. It's pretty damn hot.
And why are you wearing this gorilla costume?
It's the last day of class, baby. You gotta dress in a gorilla.
Okay, there you have it.
And you just came off the bull riding event, and you're being attacked with a friend wearing a condom on his head. How was the bull riding for you?
At first it was fine, but when it started going faster, it really hurts. That's the guy that just attacked me with the condom on his head.
Okay, so we're here with
Melinda Morbin.
And this is the forestry event. What were you guys doing today?
We were doing logger sports today.
And what does that involve? Can you explain that for the radio listeners?
That's involving underhand chopping wood between your feet, that is, until the block breaks, cross-cut sawing through wood with partners, girls and guys, guy and guy partners, throwing axes, choker races.
So is this a competition?
We put on a little competition here today, yeah. We split ourselves, our logger sports team from UBC here, we split ourselves up into two teams and put on a little competition.
Because I imagine it's too dangerous to let the general student population participate in these events.
Yeah, even one of our own got injured, so I'm going to say someone who doesn't know what they're doing, we'd probably have some accidents.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Hi, we're talking to
Michael Duncan
about his experience with the dunk tank. And why would you volunteer to be in the dunk tank?
I love UBC so much that I figured I gotta get this pumped up, and students love dunking people in a tank. And I'm willing to put myself forward to get dunked.
So you look pretty cold right now. You've just been dunked.
I'm absolutely freezing. I'm really glad they had a towel, because I definitely did not bring a towel with me.
Aiming to dunk you, were they people you knew or just angry students letting off steam for exams?
Most of them were people I knew. Most of them wanted to dunk me because I'm Mike Duncan.
Great, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so we're here with Matthew Naylor, who's about to go get ready for the dunk tank. What do you have to say about that?
I don't know, I love block party, it's awesome, and oh, it's Mike.
And why
Especially as an observer, I can't wait to see Matthew Naylor wet and soaking and so drippy wet sexy.
Yes, we noticed you were quite enamored with him earlier.
So Matthew, why would you volunteer yourself to be dunked?
I don't know. I wish I was more drunk. You know, no, really. I really do.
Well, good luck, Matthew.
Thank you to the ladies who went out from our news team and took their time in their afternoon to go and talk to drunk
frat
first
boys.
And second and third and fourth years. So that is, for our listeners who aren't UBC students, a little cut of what you could expect if you were on campus this afternoon, or if you're a UBC student, I'm sure you're familiar with it. Katie,
It's madness. What can I say, Rita? It just caps off a whole year of adventure here at UBC and here at News 101. Rita and I took the helm of News 101 from the illustrious Tyler Noble, who was the news director last year. Found this a little difficult at first. You know, transitions always are. But with the help of our awesome, awesome news crew, these lovely ladies, we've managed to run a very successful show.
We have. It's been dynamic. It's been fun. It hasn't always been smooth and perfect, but it's been really good educational experience, and we have a good team here with some well-rounded individuals now doing quality radio.
We do, and sadly we're losing some of these well-rounded individuals to graduation, like Leanne.
Right.
You, Leanne, say a few words.
This was the best part of my final year. I'm really glad I joined you.
Aww.
Guys for this, and I made like great friends, and I've learned a lot from you girls as well, so it's been a really great experience for me.
And Leanne, tell the listeners what it is exactly that you'll be going on to do.
I am going to BCIT for the broadcast journalism program.
Okay, so you're carrying on in the tradition of broadcasting.
I am, yes.
Excellent. Good. We exciting. Like to see our own go on and do great things.
Yes.
Thanks.
Rita's also graduating, but coming back for another year to run News 101. And the rest of Tracy Fuller is going to the CBC this summer, so you'll see her around there. The rest of us will be kicking around, working, but coming back in September to bring you yet another season of News 101. And I think we should thank all the listeners for sticking with us every Monday and Friday.
Yeah, we do have a good listenership, and they are wonderful people for contributing any comments they have on news that they find disturbing, happy, exciting, frustrating, whatever.
So. And, of course, our producer, Megan Turcato, who without the show would not be on the air for you to listen to.
Yes. Okay, so we're going to wrap up the end of this afternoon's show with a little weather snippet, your weekend weather forecast with Selena Ferris.
We are looking at a definite warming trend for at least part of the weekend. Saturday will be warm and sunny as a ridge develops over the region, a high of 19 degrees. This summer-like weather will not last as a frontal system will push into the area for Sunday. Temperatures will drop back down to around 10 degrees, and parts of Vancouver will see showers. Into next week, we will continue to see highs around 10 degrees and some chance for light showers. That's your weekend weather brought to you by the Storm Club at UBC. For more information, you can email us at stormubc@gmail.com.
Thank you, Selena, for your help, and for all those listeners out there, now you've got an update on what to expect this weekend. That's our program for Friday, April 11th, 2008. Today's newscast was brought to you entirely by volunteer efforts, and if you'd like to share your comments, give us a hot news tip, or get involved with the show, please contact us. Our phone number is 604-822-5334, or you can always email news@citr.ca.
Megan Turcato produced this radio program. For more news, join us Monday at 5 p.m. for the next edition of News 101. For the entire news team here at CITR, I'm Katie Conley.
And I'm Rita Farkas. Thanks for listening. Coming up next, more locally produced, independent, volunteer radio. This is CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.